You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP, on the web at www.yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at www.wdiy.org. So good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. Obviously, this is not Lori Siebert tonight. Lori is taking a much-deserved vacation. This is Rod Young, CPA, CFP. I have hosted numerous times in the past to help give Lori a break, and I'm looking forward to the show tonight. Glad that you're out there listening. And as we all know, if you're a regular listener, Lori's a tough act to follow. So hopefully I'll do a good job and come reasonably close to the high standards that she sets week in and week out on this show. Again, welcome to the show, everyone. Today is Wednesday, October 31st, 2012, and there is obviously a lot going on. First off, it's Halloween, which I think everyone's pretty much forgotten about thanks to Hurricane Sandy. I'm not sure if there was much, if any, trick-or-treating going on tonight with the after effects of the storm. Hopefully you'll find tonight's show more treat than trick. I guess we'll know by the end of the show. There's a presidential election in 6 days, which everybody seems to have forgotten because of the storm. And maybe that's not a bad thing as we get inundated with election news. But that's going on just 6 days from now. And of course, we're all busy cleaning up and, you know, getting over the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. So for those out there listening who have power, I'm jealous. Many of us are still without power. Mine went out Monday evening around 10 o'clock, and the great news is, according to PPL's website, the power should be back in my neighborhood at sometime around 11 o'clock tonight. So hopefully that happens, because those got cold shower this morning was pretty tough. According to the last local news report I saw, PPL is saying this is the third biggest storm-related outage they've had. And I don't know if that statistic has changed or not. That was just one report that I saw, surpassed only by Hurricane Irene last August and then the October snowstorm at this time last year. So those of us at Valley National certainly hope that you've come through the storm safely and with minimal damage. And we also applaud and appreciate the extraordinary efforts over the past few days of all the municipal employees, police, fire, the PPL work crews, the work crews that have come in from outside the area to help, all the first responders and essential personnel. We very much appreciate all the efforts that you put out. On to the financial news, and certainly the financial markets were significantly impacted by Sandy. The New York Stock Exchange was closed on Monday and Tuesday as a result of the storm. It did reopen this morning. The primary reason for the closure was to not put people who work at the exchange in harm's way. I thought it'd be interesting to go over a little stock market history related to closures of the stock market. According to the articles I've read and the news reports I've heard, this is the first time since 1888 that the New York Stock Exchange has closed for 2 days due to a weather event. In 1888, the market closed on March 12th and 13th as a result of what is referred to as the Great Blizzard of 1888. Evidently, there was about 2 feet of snow and very high winds and brought down all the telegraph lines back then. And the only way they had to communicate stock prices at the time, because the telegraph lines were down, was by runners. By people running out and running through the city, communicating stock prices verbally. I mean, to me, that's just where we are technologically today. To think about that in 1888 is pretty amazing. The last time that the stock market closed due to a hurricane was September 27th, 1985, for Hurricane Gloria. So it's been, you know, 30 some years since a hurricane has shut down the stock market. There's been other reasons the stock exchange has not opened on a normal trading day in the past, for non-weather related reasons. From my reading, my understanding is that the longest closure of the stock market began Friday, July 31st, 1914, which was the day after Germany mobilized its army for the invasion of Belgium and France. And that prompted the stock exchange to close the next day. And it didn't open again until November 28th. Of 1914. So about 4 months later, bonds began trading, and trading in stocks did not begin in full again until April 1st, 1915. So almost 8 months after it closed, the stock exchange finally reopened as a result of World War I. Back then, the stock exchange had made a decision that their goal was to never be closed for two consecutive trading days. It's also my understanding that one of the reasons that the Friday after Thanksgiving the market is open for half a day, so that it's not closed on two normal trading days. There have been a few two-day closures since the early part of the century. The most recent and only one closure of longer than 2 days, and that was from September 11th to September 15th, 2001, after the World Trade Center attacks. So that's kind of your brief little trivia on closing of the stock market. So to their credit, given how that storm hit Manhattan, the fact that they're open this morning normally is, I think, pretty amazing. So while we're on the subject of the stock markets and the fact that they were open today, just what were the results? So the markets were mixed today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down slightly today. It was at 13,096.23, which is down about 0.08% for the day, so effectively flat for the day. Year to date, the Dow is up 7.19%. The NASDAQ index closed down today at 2,977.23. That is down 0.36% for the day. However, year to date, the NASDAQ is up 14.28%. And finally, in terms of the U.S. equity indexes, the S&P 500 closed up today. So unlike the Dow and the NASDAQ, which were slightly down, the S&P 500 was slightly up today at 1,412.16, up 0.02%, so up just a fraction. And year-to-date in 2012, the S&P 500 is up 12.29%. So there's our stock market history and what the stock market did today in its first trading day since being closed for the storm. Okay, so what are we going to discuss tonight? As you regular listeners may be aware, we cover a variety of financial planning topics on this show. I know over the past few weeks, looking back, Lori has covered living trusts and estate planning and multi-state tax issues on three of her last shows. So originally tonight, we were going to do an overview of the current mortgage and refinancing environment, but unfortunately, our scheduled guest, Jane Hathaway from Premier Mortgage, was not able to be here this evening. Jane's been a guest in the past, and we're going to get her rescheduled as soon as possible. She's a great guest to have on the show. So what are we going to talk about tonight? We are going to talk about some tax topics, and a topic that I believe couldn't be more timely is I'm going to talk to you about the rules related to taking a tax deduction when you have a casualty loss, when you have a loss as a result of a storm like Hurricane Sandy. And I think you'll find this to be many of you may find this to be an interesting topic. Before we get into it, we're going to take a brief break, and I'll be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rod Young, CPA, CFP, on Your Financial Choices, hosting in place of Lori Siebert. Just a reminder, this is a live call-in show, and you can call in with your questions. And I was just getting into our topic tonight and don't even know if I've given out the number for the show yet tonight. So the number to call in is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Neil is here in place of Andrea tonight and can answer your calls. You're welcome to talk to me live, or Neil will jot down your questions and hand them to me, and I'll do my best to respond to them. So I was just introducing the topic tonight. We went over a little bit of stock market history and just thought, given the one of the biggest storms that has ever hit the Northeast and the broad impact it's had across our region, I thought it would be a very timely topic to talk about what is known in the Internal Revenue Code as casualty losses, and talk about how there may be tax deductions for you for losses that you have as a result of the storm. Once we've talked about that, if we have time remaining, I'll give you a brief update on some indexing. We've just gotten the new amounts for 2013 for things like your 401k contributions and IRA contributions. And if we have even further time remaining, we'll talk about some new taxes coming our way and talk about some of the major tax law changes coming up. Some of these things we've covered in the past few months on the show, and with the election coming up next week, that will certainly have an influence on the directions of tax law, and we'll certainly be addressing it in depth also on future shows. So, again, we're here to take your questions, 610-758-8810 is the number to call. This is Rod Young, hosting for Lori Siebert tonight. Okay, casualty losses. This is something that many of you may not be familiar with. It's just not one of those common deductions on your tax return like mortgage interest and charitable contributions and real estate taxes. It's just a much rarer deduction that people take. They're complex rules. We're going to address them at a very high level tonight on the show. But in general, subject to a variety of limitations, just like there is with everything else under the tax code, there's a lot of rules behind the scenes. But a taxpayer may claim as a tax deduction a loss from a casualty or theft. Again, subject to various limitations and regulations. So I use the word casualty or theft. Given Hurricane Sandy, we're going to focus on the casualty loss tonight, not so much on the theft, but these rules do apply to losses from a theft as well. Okay, so just what is a casualty loss? Well, under the code, under the Internal Revenue Code, a casualty is defined as, you know, the damage, destruction, or loss of property resulting from an identifiable event that is sudden, unexpected, or unusual. And I emphasize several of the words here because they're very, very important in being permitted to take this kind of loss. And of particular importance is sudden, unexpected, or unusual. Sudden means an event that is swift. It's not gradual or progressive. It happens quickly. Unexpected is an event that is ordinarily unanticipated and unintended. And I'm going to stop for 1 second. I do have a question. This is from Dan in Bethlehem, and Dan is off the air. And the question I have is at 70, has to do with 70 and a half and IRA distribution rules. And the same for 401k. The caller is 71 now and wants to know if he needs to make adjustments. I'm not sure if I'm going to guess as to some of what Dan is asking here in this question. And the rules Dan is referring to is at 70 and a half, there are rules that are referred to as required minimum distribution rules, or RMDs. And they basically say that at 70 and a half, you must start taking money out of your tax-deferred individual retirement accounts and 401k accounts, 403b accounts, those types of plans. And so now that and each year, and I'm not sure this might be the adjustment that Dan is referring to, but each year you typically, there's different methods for calculating what this required minimum distribution is, but typically, it's a calculation that is redone each year. It's based on the account values of your 401k and your IRAs as of December 31st of the preceding year. And you take those account values and you divide by a factor in an IRS table. So each year, you take your new December 31st account value and you divide by a different factor. The factor goes down by a little bit each year in the IRS table. So, Dan, if that's the kind of adjustment that you're referring to, the need to adjust the amount of the required minimum distribution each year, then yes, that is the case. That does need to be done each year. We've done radio shows on this entire topic. We've done devoted entire radio shows to this topic in the past. It is a topic that is, has a lot of complex rules to it. But in general, Dan, I believe what you're looking for is, yes, you need to be on top of what that new amount is each year that needs to come out of those retirement accounts. If I haven't answered your question precisely, by all means, call back or send us an email, and we'll answer it. Try to answer it in more detail. But hopefully, that's helpful to you, Dan. Thank you very much for the call. It's much appreciated. Okay, so getting back to the topic of the evening, and by the way, as you noticed, Dan's call was didn't have anything to do with casualty losses that I was talking about tonight. And we always, Lori and I both, encourage calls on any topic. We always have a topic we're going to discuss over the course of a show. But understand that while you're listening out there, there may be something on your mind or a question that you have on a financial topic that doesn't have anything to do with what you're talking about, and we welcome those. So please keep the calls coming. So casualty losses, I was defining a casualty for you and defining under what circumstances you might be able to, you know, to take a deduction on your tax return for a loss. So we were talking about it being a loss that was from an event that was sudden, unexpected, or unusual. Unexpected meaning not ordinarily anticipated, and unusual would mean not a day-to-day occurrence. So certainly a storm like Hurricane Sandy is not a day-to-day occurrence. It's not ordinarily anticipated. You don't expect to have a hurricane. Sure, they happen. So the most common examples are where there would be a casualty loss would be things like automobile accidents, earthquakes, fires, floods, you know, other weather events like hurricanes, tornadoes. I mentioned theft earlier. Those are the most common types of casualty losses. Other listed examples that I've seen in IRS materials include shipwrecks. This was one of my favorites. Sonic booms. Volcanic eruptions, quarry blasts, landslides, and terrorist attacks. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll continue on the topic. Be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 44 degrees under overcast skies. Tonight, slight chance of showers, lows around 36. Thursday, chance of showers, highs around 55. Friday, cloudy skies, highs around 54 degrees. Saturday and Sunday, the sun returns with high temperatures around 52 degrees. Now back to your financial choices.
Hello, everyone. Rod Young back on Your Financial Choices and hosting in place of Lori Siebert tonight. Lori will return next week. It's great to be here. The number to call if you have a question, give us a call with a question you have on any financial topics. I'll do my best to answer. The number again, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I know many of you are out there without power listening to the show on your battery-powered radios. Glad to have you with us tonight. And I've been talking about a topic for the past few minutes that may have a lot of application to people in our area as a result of Hurricane Sandy, and that is the ability to take a tax deduction if you have a loss, a property loss damage as a result of the storm. We just got done listing some common reasons that people have casualty losses, and hurricane falls under that list. And it is very important to understand that the event which caused the damage must be sudden, unexpected, or unusual. So an example of a kind of loss that is not sudden, unexpected, or unusual would be termite damage. That is, termite damage would be considered progressive deterioration over a period of time, and that would not be a loss that would result in any kind of tax-deductible loss. So, big picture real quick, as tax professionals, we don't see a lot of deductions every year for casualty losses for personal property like damage to your home, damage to a car or that. And why is this? Because once you have determined the amount of your uninsured loss, let's stop right there. To the extent you have insurance and you get reimbursed, then it's going to mitigate the amount of real loss you have. So that kind of limits the tax deduction right then and there. But so let's just say that your insurance doesn't fully reimburse you for your loss. You must subtract $100 from the amount of the remaining loss net of the insurance reimbursement. And then the loss is only deductible to the extent that it exceeds 10% of your adjusted gross income. So it's just not a deduction that we see quite often on your tax return. So I just want to throw that out to you, but I'm also going to throw out to you a caveat as to why we may see more of these deductions related to this storm. And it has to do with what's happened in the past with some other storms. And that is, I think the most important takeaway I have for you right now is just be aware that there is potentially a tax deduction for you as a result of a property damage loss you have from damage from Sandy. And begin to keep track of the amount of that loss. What are those expenses that you're incurring as a result of the loss? And then make sure to talk about it with your tax advisor. And here's the thing I want to note, and I think it's very important. I've talked about this $100 threshold, and particularly this 10% of adjusted gross income threshold. And by the way, I'm going to walk through an example a little bit later, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. But there have been instances in the past where Congress has passed legislation that waives these thresholds, and that's huge in terms of having the ability to deduct an out-of-pocket loss here. And so just to give you an example of when Congress has passed emergency legislation to allow a greater amount of deductions in this area, back after Hurricane Katrina, after Wilma, Hurricane Wilma and Rita, and also as a result of the Midwestern disaster area that was declared a few years back, I think that was in 2008. Katrina, I believe, was 2005. There was emergency legislation that was passed that waived these limiting thresholds on the ability to take a casualty loss. So I'm speculating, and there certainly is no guarantee right now, but the impact of Sandy is astronomical, and it's already being referred to as kind of the Northeast's version of Katrina. Again, no guarantee, but I wouldn't be surprised to see these deduction limits waived through the enactment of future emergency legislation. Okay, so we've talked about the general rules that create a casualty. Then it's a matter of, just exactly how do you determine the amount of the casualty? And so per the Internal Revenue Code, a casualty loss is equal to the lesser of. So I'm going to give you two descriptions here. It's the lesser of the adjusted basis in the property before the casualty. And just for those of you listening out there who are not familiar with the term adjusted basis, for purposes of this discussion, it's really what did you pay for the property? And I'm going to stop for one moment here. I do have a question from Allentown. It is someone who's off the air. Liz from Allentown does have a question about casualties. Car damaged by a tree. She has a deductible, presumably, that she's going to have to pay as a result of the tree damage, and then presumably she's going to get some insurance reimbursement above and beyond the deductible. So can she count on being able to take a tax deduction for the amount of deductible that she is going to have? It did not happen as during Sandy, so I'm assuming it happened from some other quick event that caused the tree to fall over. If that's not the case, then you may not have a deduction here. So the answer would be, it in general, Liz, would be yes. So let's just say you have $1,000 deductible. A lot of people have either $500 or $1,000 deductibles on their auto insurance. Let's just say, for example, you have $1,000 deductible. Then I would say, yeah, this falls into the category of the type of loss that you can take a deduction for. But the problem you're then going to run into, and I was just alluding to them a little bit on the show, was there are these limiting factors. You first have to take $100 off the amount that you can deduct. So in my example, if your deductible is $1,000, you have to take $100 off. So that leaves you with a $900 deduction. And then you can only deduct it to the extent that that $900 is greater than 10% of your adjusted gross income. So in my example, if your adjusted gross income is more than $9,000, then there's no deduction for you here. Okay. I'm speculating that if this event, what happened to you, Liz, were the result of Sandy, perhaps they're going to waive this 10% of adjusted gross income threshold. So I believe, unfortunately, based on what you described in your question, Liz, there is probably not a deduction for you on your tax return for this particular loss. But very, very good question. Okay, we are just about at a break. We're talking about casualty losses. I'll continue on that topic on how you define that in a minute when we return from break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hello, everyone. Rod Young, CPA, CFP, on Your Financial Choices, hosting for Lori Siebert tonight. We are talking about casualty losses, which seems to be an appropriate topic given recent events. I've spent a little bit of time talking, kind of defining what a casualty loss is. And I just had just begun to then tell you how you go about determining what the amount of the casualty is. Liz called in, had a great question about an event that happened, a tree falling on her automobile. And Liz, if you're still listening, and if I've in any way misstated your question, then by all means, check in with us via email, and we'll see if we can't answer your question further. The number to call, just a reminder, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Again, this is Rod Young hosting Your Financial Choices tonight. So the amount of the casualty loss is equal to the lesser of what you paid for the property or the decrease in the fair market value of the property as a result of the casualty. So what you do is you figure out what the fair market value of the property was immediately before the event, in this case immediately before Sandy, and then you figure out what the fair market value of the property is post-Sandy, post-damage, and come up with the difference between the two, and then compare that to what you paid for the property, and the lesser of those amounts then becomes eligible for this loss, for this deduction. Then from that, we're not done, though. That just determines the amount of the casualty. Doesn't take us to the amount of the deduction. You then have to deduct from that the insurance reimbursement that you receive or expect to receive. So we've got a loss. We've identified it as the lesser of what you paid for the property or the decrease in fair market value as a result of the damage to the property. We then subtract from it the amount of insurance reimbursement that you received. We then have limits, so we then come up with a dollar amount net of the insurance reimbursement. And then we have limits, and I briefly touched upon those limits earlier. We first have to deduct $100 per casualty, okay? No big deal. The big deal is that the loss then needs to exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. I did make note earlier, in case you're just tuning in, I did make note earlier, there have been examples of major events, major weather events in the past, where this $100 offset and this 10% of adjusted gross income threshold have been waived. An example of that would be Hurricane Katrina. Those thresholds were waived. Some other recent hurricanes, those thresholds were waived. I believe the flooding, the Midwestern disaster area flooding from a few years back, those thresholds were waived. And what we're talking about then, by the way, all of this discussion so far has really focused on personal use property, your home, your car. We really haven't talked about business property or income producing property. The major distinction there is if it's business property or income producing property, then they're not, that you're already not subject to these 10% of adjusted gross income limits, or the this $100 issue. And then there's some other rules about whether if you've taken depreciation on the property, how much your actual loss is. So I'm going to give you a simple example. Tried to make it as simple as possible going over it over the over the air on the radio. So we have a you have a home. Perhaps it's down at the at the Jersey Shore, and we all know from what we've seen, the visual images we've seen, there's a lot of damage down there. So you have a home that you purchased for $200,000, that was worth $300,000 before the storm, and it's been completely wiped out. Now it's worth nothing. You get an insurance after all of the applications for insurance and what have you. You're reimbursed $150,000, and your adjusted gross income happens to be $200,000. So in this example, first the loss would be the lesser of $200,000. That's what you paid for it. Or the decrease in the fair market value. Well, it was worth $300,000 before the storm, and now it's worth nothing. So the decrease, the change in fair market value, is $300,000. So the lesser of those two is what you paid for the home, or $200,000. So from this, now you have been reimbursed $150,000 from your insurance company. So that leaves you with an uninsured, unreimbursed loss of $50,000. To determine the deductible loss under the general rules, you subtract $100, and then you subtract 10% of your adjusted gross income. So in my example, adjusted gross income is $200,000. So after we subtract $100,000 and after we subtract $20,000, 10% of your adjusted gross income, we are left with a deduction of $29,000, if my math is correct, $29,900. We don't know if these thresholds that you have to exceed are going to be waived or not. It could happen, but that's a simple example of the amount of the deduction. By the way, you claim this deduction, then there's an actual form that you fill out. The IRS has a form for everything, and so it is jot this down. It's form 4684. And you figure out and report your loss on that form, and then it flows through and becomes part of your itemized deductions on Schedule A of your income tax return. There are also some other great IRS materials to educate you regarding casualty losses. So one of them is IRS Publication 547. It's titled Casualties, Disaster, and Thefts. And so that was IRS Publication 547. And then there are two other publications, IRS Publication 584, that's 584, and IRS Publication 584B. And what these are workbooks that you can use for determining your loss. Publication 584 is for helping you determine your loss when it's personal use property like your home. And 584B is for helping you work through the loss on business property. So my advice to you would be, if you've suffered a loss as a result of this storm, get yourself a copy of IRS Form 4684 and its instructions. Get yourself a copy of IRS Publication 547 and get yourself a copy of Publication 584 and 584B and familiarize yourself with them in a hurry. You can get these materials on the IRS's website. They have an excellent website. I've referred to it and given it out on the show quite a number of times in the past. It's www.irs.gov. That's www.irs.gov. So it's a great website, and you can get each of these publications on there. Again, we are here talking about casualty and theft losses, and in this instance, really casualty losses because of Hurricane Sandy. And the number to call if you have questions on this topic or any other financial topic is 610-758-8810. It's Rod Young here tonight in place of Lori Siebert. So we've defined what a casualty loss is, and we've defined how you determine the amount of the casualty loss, and then we have walked through the offsets to the amount of that loss, such as the insurance reimbursement you receive, and then these IRS thresholds to ultimately come up with the actual amount of the deduction that you're permitted to take on your tax return. There's a few other things of interest that you should be aware of related to this issue. And that is in terms of, sorry, just looking over some notes I have here. It's important to understand the timing. When do you take the loss? And then it's important to understand what if you expect one level of insurance reimbursement and then ultimately receive a different amount. So in general, the casualty loss must be claimed in the year that the casualty occurred. Well, that seems pretty logical to me. But what if the extent of the damage can't be fully ascertained until a later year? In that case, you may actually take a deduction for the loss in the later year. So just that little tidbit there to keep in mind. These rules are complex, and that's why I gave out the IRS publication information earlier. And ultimately, if you really have a significant loss here, I would recommend you talk to a tax professional. So let's talk a little bit about insurance reimbursement. As we mentioned, to the extent that you do receive an insurance reimbursement, that is an offset to the final amount of the deduction that you may be able to take on your tax return. So it is important to understand that if indeed the loss is insured, in other words, you have homeowner's insurance, you must file a claim for insurance or you're not permitted to take a deduction for the loss. So that is something to keep in mind. There are also rules out there regarding if the amount of the insurance reimbursement is greater than the loss. Believe it or not, the general rules say that excess is actually taxable income. I don't know if in my entire career I've ever reported an excess insurance reimbursement as taxable income, but that's what the rules say. There are exceptions to that, and the most common exception would be that if the full amount of the reimbursement is reinvested back into the property that was damaged, then you don't have to report that as taxable income. But you have to complete that reinvestment of that insurance, those insurance proceeds, by the end of the second year after the disaster has occurred You have four years if it's a loss as a result of a federally declared disaster area, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, because there are some very important things to understand regarding these deductions if you're in a federally declared disaster area. And then what happens if you receive the insurance reimbursement in the year following the year of the loss? You had claimed the loss in the prior year, expecting a particular amount of insurance reimbursement, and then in the later year you actually received more or less than what you were expecting. And so hence what you based your deduction on. So if the reimbursement is more than expected in that following year, it's more than what you took into account in calculating your loss deduction the preceding year, then that excess insurance reimbursement that you receive is taxable income in the year that you receive it. If the insurance reimbursement that you ultimately receive is less than the amount that you expected, then the additional deduction can be taken in the year, this is the wording under the code, in the year you reasonably expect that no further reimbursement will be received. So you don't go back and amend the prior tax return. You go ahead and you take the additional deduction in a subsequent year. Okay, so we've been spending all this time talking about casualty losses. When we come back, we're going to talk about federally declared disaster areas and some unique tax rules related to that. We will be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
All right, everybody. This is Rod Young, CPA, CFP, on Your Financial Choices, hosting in place of Lori Siebert tonight. She's taking a week off. She will be back next week. I probably should know what her topic is next week, but I don't. But I know we will announce it in advance, and you can find it on the website. The number to call, as you all know, this is a live call-in show. We've been spending the past 35 to 45 minutes talking about the tax rules related to claiming a deduction for a casualty loss on your tax return. And this is you're going to hear more about this because of the just widespread damage from Hurricane Sandy. If you've got questions on this topic or any other financial topic, I have another caller right now off the air. Liz, I think we had a Liz earlier, so I don't know if this is the same Liz or not. And the question has to do with student loans. From the notes I'm reading here, it appears we have some private student loans and some federal student loans. And the federal loans are at an interest rate of 3.3%, and the private are at an interest rate of 6.5%. And we have different balances. The federal loans were at $18,000, the private at $25,000. And the question is, should Liz consider consolidating these loans or paying separate? If separate, should she try to pay the higher one earlier, she has limited budget. My gut reaction on this, and there are very, very specific and no surprise complex rules on the whole idea of student loan consolidation. And the FAFSA website, I believe it's www.fafsa.gov, is an excellent website with these rules. But I believe that it would not be a good idea to consolidate these loans. The federal loans, I can't tell, but at that interest rate, I'm wondering if those were subsidized loans. I'm not sure, but I don't think you're going to find that consolidating these loans is going to make sense, that you're going to want to keep them separate to preserve that low interest rate on the federal loans. I think a consolidation of these might work against you in terms of being able to keep that 3.3% interest rate. I'm not 100% certain of that, Liz, but that's my gut on the question of consolidating, but I certainly would encourage you to do some research on loan consolidation on that FAFSA website. If I'm correct, and it is better to keep these separate, then certainly I would recommend that you pay the private loan back earlier if you can. The note says here you have a limited budget, but just the fact that it's at a higher interest rate, at almost twice the interest rate, I would encourage you to be trying to tackle that loan. If you're going to accelerate repayment of either loan, that with the higher interest rate loan would certainly be the one that I would think you should try to repay faster. I apologize. I don't have I'm not answering this question with 100% certainty. Hopefully I've given you a resource, Liz, that you can go to and do a little research, and would be glad to follow up separately with more information on it. Email us at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we could arrange to talk a little more about it. Okay. There's a lot of articles, Barbara. That's a very, very hot topic. And I've done radio shows in the past dealing with the funding and paying for college and all that. And it's a lot of articles you see out there in the financial publications on the student loan bubble, the college education bubble, just because of this dramatic rise in college costs over the past few decades and the amount of debt that people, both parents and students, are taking on to pay for college. So it's a topic that's affecting a lot of people. Okay, we've got a few minutes left on the show. Continue to call in with your questions. This is great. It really makes the show go much more quickly for me, and it probably makes it more interesting for you listeners out there as well. So the number to call, 610-758-8810. Again, I'm Rod Young, and we are talking about tax deductions for casualty losses. We've gone through, defined what a casualty is, defined how you determine what the amount of the loss is, and then talked about how you go from the amount of the loss to what might actually be deductible on your tax return. And then there's some special rules related to federally declared disaster areas that can come into play here. And you can go on the FEMA, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Their website is FEMA.gov, and you can see the disaster declarations for that have been issued over the past couple of days for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and all of the other surrounding states, Delaware. And I've just been handed a note regarding next week and the guest. Thank you. Dave Elowich will be the guest, and the topic is approaching retirement planning, what to do and how. So that's great. Glad to hear that we have the name of the guest and the topic. So tuck that away for listening to the show next week. So I know from the FEMA website that I was on today, and it's also been in the news, that Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, surrounding states that have been pounded by Hurricane Sandy have been officially declared as federal disaster areas. The FEMA website actually lists it county by county. So, for example, Lehigh County, Northampton County are listed specifically on the website as federally declared disaster areas. So what are the special provisions under the tax code that relate to casualty losses when you're in a federal disaster area? So this is an interesting one. The casualty loss deduction may be taken in the year prior to the year of the loss. Okay. So in this instance, we've got 2012, Hurricane Sandy comes along. You've got a significant loss. You can actually file an amended 2011 income tax return and take the loss on your 2011 return. So why would you do this? Well, perhaps you were in a much higher tax bracket in 2011 than you expect to be in 2012, and so the loss might be worth a lot more to you in 2011. So it's a matter of doing the calculation, having your tax advisor do the calculation. Where will you get the greatest tax benefit by taking the loss? Would it be on an amended 2011 tax return, or will it be on your 2012 tax return when, in the year the loss actually happened? You have until the due date of your 2012 tax return, so that's April 15th, 2013, to file an amended 2011 tax return if you decide you want to take the loss for 2011. So that's something to keep in mind. Another special provision if it's in a federal disaster area is that if the casualty loss is related to the principal residence, and I believe this relates to the reinvestment of the insurance proceeds back into a similar property, you have 4 years rather than the normal 2 years to replace the home. I think it also has to do with there are rules regarding exclusion of gain on principal residence, and typically there's a two-year rule there. So these rules are extended to 4 years. And that it is very common that tax deadlines that occur on or around the date of the disaster are often extended. So now there's not a lot of end of October tax deadlines, but there are some. And so keep an eye out for an official announcement that these tax deadlines, whether it be a particular tax filing due date or a tax payment due date that happened to be for you on or around October 31st, those dates will probably be extended for those of you in the disaster area. And again, and I can't reiterate this one enough, as I mentioned, and over the past few years with other federally declared disasters such as Katrina, the Congress has enacted laws that waive some of these thresholds that limit the deduction that you take on your tax return. I've spent a lot of time tonight talking about this whole idea of a casualty loss. They're complex rules. I'm going to repeat there's a couple IRS publications and a form that you really should familiarize yourself with if you think you have a deductible loss. And so that's IRS Form 4684. There is IRS Publication 547. And then there's IRS Publication 584 and 584B. And these are all available, readily available to you at www.irs.gov. Okay. I will also see if we can't get those documents posted, easy access to those through the Valley National website. So what are the big takeaways regarding the tax deductibility of casualty losses? Number one, and I said it up front, educate yourself regarding these rules. Even with some of these high thresholds that I've talked about, and particularly if legislation is passed to waive the thresholds, there may be a deduction that you can claim for the loss. Number two, start documenting and tracking your loss. And use IRS publication 584 or 584B if it's a business loss for purposes of helping you document and determine your loss. And then if you know you've incurred a loss and it's not fully insured, or you're just wondering how much of a loss you might be able to deduct on your tax return, then absolutely consult with your tax advisor on this issue. So that's it on casualty losses. We probably don't have any time for any more calls tonight. We've got a little bit of time left in the show. And I know we just received news of some indexed retirement account retirement plan amounts for 2013. There's some minor changes in those amounts. So I thought I would kind of leave you with those at the end of the show here. So for those of you participating in your 401k and 403b plans, the limit for 2013 is going from $17,000 to $17,500, the amount that you can put in if you're under age 50. The catch-up contribution, if you're age 50 or over, is going to stay the same at $5,500. The IRA contribution limit is going to increase to $5,500 in 2013 from $5,000. That's if you're under age 50. If you're age 50 or over in 2013, the catch-up contribution will remain at $1,000. So in total, age 50 or over, you could do $6,500 to your IRAs in 2013. There's also been some changes to income thresholds and the phase-out of the ability to do Roth and all that. I won't go into all of those details on the show tonight. So hopefully you found the casualty loss discussion helpful. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Jeff, and have a great evening.